Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island since 1988. Goose Island's been brewing beers in the spirit of Chicago.
You can find 312 Wheat Ale, Big Juicy Beer Hug, and so many other limited releases at either of Goose's locations in Chicago. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and this week we're talking hip-hop history with Jeff Chang. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. We'll get to our interview with Jeff Chang and his co-author, Davey D. But first, we have two albums to review. That is the track Boomerang from the new Don Richard album, Second Line, an electro revival. We have been reviewing Don Richard fairly regularly on this show. This is their sixth solo album. Some of you may remember that name as a founding member of Danny DeCane. If you were a big pop head in the early 2000s, you knew Danny DeCane, you know, one of Puff Daddy's many projects. Later on, she was with Diddy's Dirty Money. And initially began her career sort of being framed as a pop artist. But as a solo act, she's opted to self-release her own music and go in the opposite direction, much to the delight of hardcore music fans. I mean, these records have been extraordinary over the years. Golden Heart opened things up in 2013, followed up by Black Heart in 2015. I think the 2016 album Redemption is where she really started to go deep into the weeds of where she was coming from and what she wanted to do, really plumbing her Louisiana heritage there. 2019, New Breed, digging into her formative years growing up in New Orleans in the Ninth Ward there and how they built her character. Now we see sort of what I see as sort of a sequel to that record with Second Line and Electro Revival. Of course, Second Line referencing the New Orleans tradition of a funeral.
Celebratory,
you know,
funeral.
Moving on to the next world, you know, yeah. And we're marching you there. This is a track from the new album. It's called Boussy Fame from Don Richard on Sound Opinions.
Bring the beat. She been it over like she get in the heat. Sound system like a wave, she rocked in the heat. Southern girls do it better, you take the feet. Setting up a pounce hose, you take a seat. Buzz it for me. Buzz it for me. Buzz it for me. Buzz it for me. Louis and Mauvais matching the seats. Got a mean head, the bait matches. He hopscotching on you too. Trick watch the feet. The time is slowed down. It's dead for me. Buzz it for me. Buzz it for me. Buzz it for me. Buzz it for me. In case you've been missing and I've been giving you hits. You've been sleeping on this, and I've been looking up it. I said in line, you haven't been making me wait. That's what we do, babe, man, we do it all week.
That is a little bit of Boussy Fame from Don Richard's new solo album, Second Line, and a brilliant album it is, Greg. You know, Dawn is not without precedent. She is saying she is intending this album to be the start of a movement to bring pioneering black women into electronic music. You know, as a producer, I think she has vaunted up to the class of the great Missy Elliott. And as a storyteller, as an Afrofuturist, just as Janelle Monáe has created, you know, her character, the Arc Android, you know, we have here a character that Don Richard is playing And, you know, it fits into the Afrofuturistic storytelling, looking at the traditions of New Orleans, bringing them into the present, digging in the past. There's future. It's everything all over the map at once. You know, the character she's playing is King Creole. And musically, the ambition is just fantastic. We have something like Bussy Femme, which we played us in with. It is a boastful, you know, dance floor banger. We have, you know, something like Jacuzzi, which is a sensual slow jam. Morning Streetlights, you know, pure introspective, almost electronic folk music. Her talking about finding love in life.
Every time you wake up, I want you to know that I'm the only coffee you need.
You need.
You can be assured that I'ma give you more than. Bet you I can be a sure thing.
New Breed was heavily influenced by her father, whose old funk band Chocolate Milk she sampled quite a bit. This album is about her mother and mom. And here's the one part I don't like, Greg. Mom appears in a couple of skit dialogue things, right? You know, I have gone on record many times. The spoken word intros of a minute or 2 minutes, they're fine to set context the first time you hear the album. Yeah. I wish after you got it once or twice, they disappeared. It's nice to hear her mother talking about how the only man she's ever love was her dad.
How many times have you been in love?
One time. Your father. That's the only time I've ever been in love.
It's nice to hear Dawn Richard declare, I am the genre. But the music says all of that and so much more better in that self-celebratory, the celebratory of a soul, right? She's made the point that a great second-line tradition in New Orleans, you can come out of your house when you hear one. You don't even have to know the deceased. You just join the musicians and the dancers following the procession and you celebrate a life.
Right. Right.
And that's what this album is, a celebration of life.
It is indeed. I disagree with you about, I wanted to hear her mom's voice. I think
you
she belongs
skits,
on this record. I don't love all the skits, but that woman has gravity, you know? And it was just like one of those things where you want to hear that voice and her description of Second Line, you know, the tradition and New Orleans. And you can hear Dawn in her mom's voice, you know? It's there. And it also, I think, indicates where Dawn Richard has been as a solo artist all along, that she's making records that she wants to make. And if everybody, if other people like it, that's cool too. But I'm really making music for me instead of an impresario like Puff Daddy or whatever, you know? I'm doing this for me. And I mean, she mixes it up. I mean, when you hear, for example, you mentioned that track Jacuzzi, it's got a little bit of that dancehall Jamaican vibe. And I hear, I hear some of her roots. You know, because she's not only rapping, she's singing on this record. Mm-hmm. There's ballads here. You know, she sings over Beethoven on this record. I mean, it's all over the map.
Yeah.
How do you go from dancehall reggae to Beethoven in the stretch of a couple of tracks? That's what she's doing here. It may be bewildering to some people. But at the heart of it is her playing on those synthesizers and keyboards, creating these textures that, as you said, she's a producer as well as the artist and singer and performer on this record. She does it all. A one-woman industry, a genre, as she said. I love the fact that she's blending not only New Orleans bounce, but there's some Chicago footwork details in there, the Jamaican dance hall that I mentioned. There's rapping, there's singing. She's mixing R&B ballads with these avant-garde synth textures. Very ambitious record musically, and it has a story at the heart of it. It's a concept record about growing up in New Orleans with her mom at the heart of it all. I think this is... You know, Dawn Richard, just about anything she puts out, I want to hear it.
Yeah. And this is a great addition to her canon.
Strong one, no one, the man above, a name, a word, I get upset in the heat. I'm smiling constantly and people constantly step on me. Shadow looms around, a feeling of bee's legs on my face. Safe inside a secret love, let's run. Anyway, mystical Shakespeare shoes, a trapped person screaming.
That is a little bit of a song called Her Hippo. Greg, I'll confess, I'm inclined to like any song with a title called Her Hippo. But this one comes to us from Dry Cleaning, from its first full album, New Long Leg. It's a fascinating group from the UK that only came together in 2017 around three gentlemen: guitarist Tom Dowse, bassist Lewis Maynard, and drummer Nick Buxton, and a truly individualistic frontwoman, Florence Shaw. Two EPs came out early on, one of them sort of a conceptual kiss to Meghan Markle.
Yeah.
And the difficulty she went through being the title of that EP, The Sweet Princess, right? There was a lot of anticipation because how well received those EPs were and singles. The group went into the studio in between lockdowns over in the UK and recorded with the great John Parrish, best known as a frequent collaborator, really the right-hand man to the great PJ Harvey for many years over many records. The album is out now. People are singing its praises high and low throughout the indie underground. Let's play a song, and we'll get into our opinions. This is Scratch Card Lanyard, which was one of the singles from Dry Cleaning. I will say, Her Hippo is a great title, but Dry Cleaning is the worst band name ever since Real Estate. New album, New Long Leg on Sound Opinions.
Many years have passed, but you're still charming. Rose falling, exploding, you can't save the world on your own, I guess. Don't send me it. You keep it. You keep it. You keep it. Weak arms can't open the door, Kung Fu Council. It'll be okay, I just need to be weird and hide for a bit and eat an old sandwich from my bag.
That is Scratch Card Lanyard from Dry Cleaning on a new album called New Long Leg. Well, by now, a lot of our listeners have already made up their minds.
Yeah.
They're either completely loving this thing and going, wow, I love this, or they're going, what the hell are they playing now?
What is this? Yes.
Yeah. And you know what? My reaction, I identify with both, because at first I was kind of like, okay, what are we getting ourselves into here? This album's getting a lot of hype, and I'm not sure I buy it.
Well, and I was the one insisting we do tackle this.
And by the fourth listen, I'm going, I love this thing.
Yeah.
I'm just going to lay all my cards on the table. The band does a great job for what it does, but Florence Shaw, that deadpan vocal style, let's put it this way. If you have a little background in Marky Smith of the Fall, Proto-Martyrs Joe Casey, one of my favorite leading actors of the last 10 years.
Let's not
Lou
leave
Reed.
Our old favorites, Art Brut.
Sure,
off
yeah.
the list, right?
It's right in that pocket, and you better be good if you're going to not sing. If you're essentially going to, you know, her audition for this band was reading from a book over their textures. And they go, that's what we want. She's a smart lady, obviously. And the vocal style fits in perfectly with the lyrics. And you do have to pay attention. First of all, texturally, what this band is doing, forefronting the bass and drums. People will say Public Image Limited, Flowers of Romance, that's an obvious reference point, post-punk, etc. But I'm hearing a lot of dub reggae. I'm hearing a lot of spaciousness in the
Which was part of later
a lot
Public
of room.
Image.
Yeah, a lot of room to work in there.
I've heard New Order and Joy Division.
Yeah.
You know, the comparisons, if you read six reviews, you'll get 60 different comparisons. I've heard Feelies people are dropping, right?
Oh.
It's all over the map.
And listen to her. You know, it's sort of a cut-up style of lyricism, but what I love about it is that she can drop these kind of, you know, juxtapose these odd images where clashing moods are constantly at war with one another over these incredible textures by the band. The guitar player is amazing. Play a single solo, but he compliments her very well.
Eruptions of noise, and there are these delicate lines.
I love it. And then these lines that just pop out. I'd like to run away with you on a plane, but don't bring those loafers.
Yeah,
you know? I mean, it's kind of like, Would you choose a dentist with a messy backyard like that?
Here's
you
my know? Favorite. I think of myself as a hardy banana with that waxy surface and delicate flowers. A woman in aviators firing a bazooka.
I love another one. That. I was laughing out loud. My only disappointment, Jim.
Yeah.
Is the song John Wick does not mention John Wick.
Why would it?
I mean, otherwise, it's Why a perfect would it? Record.
This is a brilliant woman who is channeling like Emma Peel Cool, circa the original Avengers series, walking through London and either being barraged by random texts or having the ability to like read other people's thoughts, you know, but only when she's within 3 feet, right? So she's passing them on the street, and it's this cacophony that makes no sense except as texture. But every once in a while, there is a line that jumps through. There's the part where she's taking inventory in the kitchen.
Yeah.
In control in the kitchen area, spatula pot and crumb tray, a greaseproof type of thing.
In control in the kitchen.
I don't know. That is either the meaning of life, if you are a woman in 2022, to me, or it means absolutely nothing. But in both cases, I love it.
I feel like she's noticing all the stuff in the margins of everyday life.
Yeah.
And giving it meaning.
We are big fans of dry cleaning and Dawn Richard, but we want to know what you think about those new albums. Tell us on our Facebook group or Patreon community. Leave a voice message on our website, soundopinions.org. Next, we'll get into some hip-hop history. We're going to school, Greg, with Jeff Chang and Davey D. That's coming up on Sound Opinions. Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island Beer Company. Since 1988, Goose Island's been brewing beers in and inspired by Chicago. They got 312 Wheat Ale, Hazy Beer Hug, and many more one-off beers at the Fulton Street Tap Room or their new Salt Shed Pub. The perfect place to go before a show at the Salt Shed. Me and Andrew were there on opening night, Greg. Mm-hmm. It was really exciting. You had Rocky Mountain spotted fever, tick fever. I'm sorry about that. Anyway, every time we go to one of these goose joints, there's another new one to try, and we love them all.
I'm a fan. In addition to making great products and event spaces, Goose Island has always been a supporter of music culture in Chicago and nationwide. I mean, if you see that Goose Island logo at a venue or a restaurant, you know you're in good hands.
Yeah, we are proud to be associated with Goose Island. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer, and Sound Opinions is. Remember in 2018 when Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported those parents back to their home countries, and kept the kids in the United States? Believe it or not, 6 years later, there are still hundreds of families who have not yet been reunited.
Though we as a community may feel hopeless at times, we recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm-reduction-based practice.
Since 2018, they've reunited over 100 refugee families ripped apart by the zero-tolerance policy of the previous administration. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family find legal representation, housing, and the counseling they need in order to heal and get back on their feet.
Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you would see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like us and believe that all families belong together, then join us supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today.
You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. That's gum.fm/charity.
You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website, elotrolado.org/volunteer. We're back, and we're glad to welcome hip-hop historian Jeff Chang back to the show. long-time listeners will recognize Jeff from episode 15.
15.
Back in 2006 when he just published the definitive history of early hip-hop, Can't Stop, Won't Stop. Now, 15 years later, he and co-author Davey D have updated that book for a youth edition, which is out now.
Jeff, as an author, going back to a book that was a labor of love, that was so well-received, that stands as one of the definitive accounts, if not the definitive account, of hip-hop. What was that like? You know, I never want to go back to my old books, although there's a million things I'd fix.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Me too. But, you know, this was a chance to be able to do that. It's been a blessing. I mean, you know, I just remembering the first tour and being able to come and hang with you guys over at Navy Pier, and just going, wow, I'm getting a chance to actually talk with Jim and Greg. I mean, you know, it was like, woof, it was a big deal. And the book was well received. It's been a blessing to be able to come back to it. Our editor, Monique Patterson, came back to me a couple of years ago. And, you know, me being a bit of a perfectionist, having a chance to go back to it and getting a chance to be able to work with like one of my oldest friends and somebody who I've considered to be a mentor, Dave, was just it's been an amazing ride for us. It's been a beautiful thing.
What was the goal? Yeah. I mean, obviously, young adults. You're trying to reach a different audience, maybe a little different audience. But I mean, are you envisioning this as sort of like a school textbook, or what's the sense of the mission behind doing this version of the book?
Well, it's two things. First of all, I think there's a lot of adults that will read this book, and that's important because reading is hard for a lot of people to do. And I'm saying that as somebody who teaches in college now. The first book was a monumental work. And at that time, because Jeff was changing the narrative in how he looked at hip hop, he had to show up with a lot of receipts. So he had to be like, okay, this guy, and give a whole backdrop of who this guy is. And then he'd talk about an event, and he had to kind of reference a lot of that. So it was very cerebral type. And, you know, that's good in a college setting. And at the time it was needed. But now we don't necessarily need to do that. We don't have to explain who Russell Simmons is. We don't have to explain all the things that were explained the first time. But we can go a little bit deeper into some of the narratives, and we can also tell a little bit more stories that are going to be relatable to a different generation of people. So once upon a time, it was about the record, and it was about, you know, just one or two things that we all could purchase about, you know, an individual. Today, those artists are front and center. We know them through social media and all these other things. So we can reach out and touch them a little differently. And so our focus on what they do is going to take on a different tone, if that's making sense.
Well, it's interesting because I think what you're getting at there, Dave, is the whole notion of 2005 to 2021, there's been a leap in terms of how we think about hip hop and how it has been completely absorbed into the mainstream. It is now the pop music of our time. I mean, it is multi-generational.
Right.
And it cuts across lines of gender and race in a way that maybe it didn't in 2005, that we still had to, as you were saying, explain it to some people. Now it's just like it's in the DNA of everybody, it seems like, who's under a certain age anyway.
It's in the DNA, and what happened in the first book is that it reflected the political, social, and economic times, and, you know, of the different periods that Jeff covered. So if you look at the social, political times that we're in now, we're struggling with what some people would describe as information wars. So there's a lot of distortion and a lot of revision, a lot of rewriting, a lot of erasing of history. So part of the challenge for us is to anchor things back to a solid history of, at least on this culture, and Black culture in particular, or an aspect of Black culture. So that's important as well. So when people go, oh, Macklemore, you know, that's the start of independent rap. No slight on Macklemore, but they actually have said he was the start of independent rap. There was Too Short, and E-40, and there was all these other people that, you know, we kind of mention in the book.
From the ground up, here goes some details. Cause this verse right here was made said strictly for the females. Don't y'all know it's time for y'all to blow up like me bomb instead of selling Tupperware and A-bomb. Get your business like the gold and put the peas in the pot. So your baby daddy, your baby daddy.
A big part of the first edition and the new edition of Can't Stop, Won't Stop, you talk about the four key elements of hip-hop as a culture. And I wanted to get your thoughts on how you were talking about the DJ, the rapper, the graffiti artist, and the breakdancer, right? Four elements come together, and this is a whole culture. This is not a sound. This is not a genre. This is a movement. You know, and two of those elements have sort of dropped out, you know, graffiti art and breakdancing. I was wondering about your perspective on that. And why it's still important to remember all four being essential to those early days in the Bronx.
You know, I mean, Jim, like, one could argue that they're bigger than ever, you know. B-boying and B-girling is about to become an Olympic sport. You know what I mean? And graffiti art has become street art, and now you've got folks doing NFTs, like with that sort of street art type of vibe, making literally hundreds of millions of dollars off of it. The entire art world's kind of been remade around street art. And you think of actually even what that's done to cities, right? Cities like North Miami, certainly our Bay Area and that kind of stuff, and how street art has actually ushered in the way for folks to want to move back to the cities, right? So there's a sort of reversal process of what we talked about in the book, which was the abandonment of cities in the 50s and 60s. It actually leads to neighborhoods like the Bronx, where Dave comes from, you know, kids coming together and making hip hop. So I think that in some ways, you know, as hip hop has gotten so big, it's felt like a lot more diffused. So on the one hand, you know, it's like you can have the Grammys and have Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion basically like making the whole show. And then on the other hand, it's like, you know, what is, for a kid coming up now, what does Megan Thee Stallion have to do with like Banksy, right? And so part of our job was to kind of draw those connections back together, to weave it back together, to talk about, you know, how this is sort of birthed and becomes an explosion and changes the world.
It's interesting because it has exploded. I remember in the late 90s, post the Golden Age, right? You saw the flowering of hip-hop as an art form. Every week there seemed to be a classic album that came out. And then there was this period there where, you know, Puff Daddy and all this stuff, and people are selling out. I used to love her, Common said, you know. It was kind of like it had lost its artistic bent and had become this commercialized thing.
And the political bent.
Yeah.
Because that's a big part of the first edition and the new edition.
But it seems to have, again, it seems to have recovered its footing. I mean, the Black Lives Matter movement really, to me, you know, telescoped that. Like, that was the soundtrack. Hip-hop was the soundtrack. And suddenly it was street. It was back on the streets in a way that this huge commercial art form never really lost touch with that part of it. So here we are almost 50 years in to hip-hop's, you know, evolution. And it still hasn't lost that sort of underdog, still under-recognized by the Grammys. The rockers still look askance. Oh, they don't play real instruments, you know? You still hear that stuff. What accounts for that underdog quality that I think continues to give it relevance in a lot of ways? And they're not sitting on top of the throne, even though they are the most popular artist in the world. I don't know. Does that make sense?
It does. It's a complicated question that has several layers to it, because part of hip-hop is that it's also an industry now, and it's corporate culture that's attached to it, and there are various levels or layers to how we see hip-hop. So, yeah, there's an underdog quality to it, and there always will be, because there are folks who are coming up who want to express themselves, and they're trying to make a way out of no way. The challenge is do we actually recognize that aspect of it, or are we looking for it in something that may be sometimes manufactured, sometimes not all the way, not fully connected to that underground ethos, if you may, or if we're projecting on some of this. So, for example, right now as a marketing strategy, big corporations come to the public and make it sound like they're underground, like they're, you know, like they're the struggling, you know, folks that are right. trying to come up, when really they just got some furniture, they dressed down a little yep. and they learned some slang words, and they do that. And I'm saying this as somebody that worked at a major media conglomerate that did that, mm-hmm. Clear Channel. That was the whole thing. Let's try to make it seem like yeah. we're the little guy. And in doing that, it overshadowed the little guy. So it's a little confusing for a lot of us to break through and figure out which is which. And so hip hop in many ways reinvents itself. It rewrites itself. And you have to kind of look mm-hmm. a little bit deeper. If I go to my class right now and I go, give me your playlist, most of the stuff my students are going to give me will not be on the radio.
That's SoundCloud, right? It's all SoundCloud. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's SoundCloud, right? And they're finding a whole lot of stuff that, you know, that speaks to them. And you're like, I never heard of these people. And they're like, we're 18 years old. You shouldn't be writing these people. You shouldn't
be,
you
listening
know.
To it.
Jeff, this may be a cruel thing to do to a fellow author. But I'm going to do it anyway, because I think you have the last laugh. You know, I went back to the New York Times review when your book came out, and I'm sure yeah. you remember that one. It was kind of addled. They accused yeah. you of having like kind of a one-sided history. You know, what's all yeah. this talk about the importance of politics? He doesn't mention Eminem once. Right. You know, but there's a sentence here that they quote in that review that I think has really stood the test of time. You had contended that the black thing you once couldn't understand had become a G thing you could buy into. You're talking about the rise mm-hmm. of gangster rap. The Chronic, mm-hmm. the Crip Walk, Condoms, Con Art, Chevrolet, Pendleton, Zig Zag, Seagram, Remy, Hennessy, Tanqueray, Desert Eagle, Dog Pound, Death Row. Here was the short-lived post-truce freedom recast as the sweet sound of rapsploitation and a new corporate multiculturalism, all right? Which I think, you know, we kind of see the end of that with a Chicagoan, you know, its logical conclusion, Chief Keef, you know, and then like the gangster pose, man, there's real stuff, vitally important, happening in the streets. Let's get back to where this music started. Or am I reading that wrong?
First of all, do you want to read our next book? Like, like you just read that sentence, made it sound like so much better than it actually was written. we just need to have you like in the studio behind the mic.
I was struck by that at the time, and I'm still struck by it today. So I was just trying to channel my inner rapper.
You had that gravitas. Well,
you know, when I worked on Wall Street, I was working my way through college, and this is when the garage is blowing up, and all the black kids I worked with used to call me Beatmaster Jimmy D, because they knew I played the drums.
Wow.
Right? You know, they knew I played the drums. They didn't know I played punk rock, you know, but I was, you know. But that's as good as I get. I don't get any better than that, so.
We got to dig out those records from the crates.
There you go.
Beatmaster Jimmy D, I like awesome. That. Not to be confused with Beatmaster Clay from Florida.
No. I never would claim that appellation.
Let's go back to your question. It's really interesting because when the book first came out, we were in the middle of two wars, and radio had consolidated. Media consolidation was underway. This kind of resulted in all kinds of stuff. One of them being Davey getting kicked off the air of Clear Channel for being too political.
Yeah.
And so, you know, part of what I think the New York Times was reflecting was the view of hip hop at that point, which is, you know, shut up and rap, basically, right? Yeah, just like what they tell LeBron, right? You know, like shut up and dribble, same thing they tell the WNBA, right? This notion of folks of color, especially black folks, are there to be seen and for us to clap for and entertain and be entertained by, but not to be able to say anything about like where this is coming from at all. So the book kind of like put a finger in the eye of I won't mention the reviewer's name, but those types of folks.
Yeah.
The beautiful closure that Dave and I got was that when we were writing this particular book, the book writing extended into 2020 into the pandemic and COVID hitting communities of color like a hurricane, you know, and President Trump up there talking about the Chinese flu and inciting this wave of hate violence against Asian Americans, and then George Floyd gets killed, right? And so, you know, 25 million people pour into the streets. And Dave and I are like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, stop, stop everything. Like, if you have to push the date back, you have to push the date back. But it was this piece where it was like, this is what we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. This is always what hip hop was meant to be. And as you all remember, like the first edition of the book closes with the protest that's happening in 2000. We had to tell 20 years of what happened there. And it begins in the underground and it comes to the mainstream. And I think 25 million people in the streets can't be wrong. So, you know, that's sort of how it comes back around for us to be able to make sure that what we're saying here with hip hop is that the story of hip hop is American history that hasn't been told.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's the hidden text. Mm-hmm. Chief Keef is a hidden text, right? He's talking about what's happening in the streets when folks at that particular point were not, right? In government and in the mainstream. Kendrick Lamar, right? Rappers like Rhapsody.
Anxiety, you die not past the sobriety, Atlanta, Georgia, that's I got 99 problems, and 12 still the biggest. I got 99 problems, but time bullet tricks. I got 99 problems, and 12 still the biggest.
People like Cardi B, like sitting down Bernie Sanders for a talk, not Bernie Sanders sitting Cardi B for a talk, right?
All right, guys, so this is Cardi and Bernie. A couple of weeks ago, I asked my followers, what type of questions would you like to ask a Democratic candidate? Let's go, baby.
That's the kind of influence hip hop has, and that's the story that needed to be told. So it was a beautiful bit of closure for us.
Do you have thoughts on hip hop's place in American culture? Share them in our Facebook group, our Patreon community, or leave a voice message at soundopinions.org. Coming up, more with Jeff and Davey D, plus Beach Bunny. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
We're back, and we have hip-hop historians Jeff Chang and Davey D with us. Let's get back to that conversation.
Hip-hop. And it's unfair to put this on hip-hop because it infects all aspects of culture and entertainment. But diversity, women's voices, gay voices. Early on, there was a debate in hip-hop about, you know, are gays even welcome here? Women MCs were fewer and farther between than they are now. But how has hip-hop engaged with these areas, and how do you feel it's progressed or not since the book, the original book was written in 2005?
Well, I think, you know, a positive thing was the chance to reopen the book, crack it back open and sort of rewrite it was a chance to really correct the record and to be able to really center and highlight the role of women in hip hop. So we're able to talk from the very beginning from Cindy Campbell, you know, DJ Kool Herc's sister. Davey calls her the first hip-hop entrepreneur. There's a direct line from Cindy Campbell throwing a party that her brother, DJ Kool Herc, gets to spin at, all the way up to Diddy, all the way up to Jay-Z. It's just that we don't think of it that way, right? We've never thought of it that way. But if she hadn't thrown the party, collect the money, and even had the idea for the party in the first place, set up the hot dogs and the Coke and the Colt 45 malt liquor, there wouldn't have been the party that DJ Kool Herc would have spun at, and there wouldn't have been a new scene. You know, thinking about that all the way through the old school and into, you know, Roxanne Shanté, who's, you know, still doing her thing, all the way on up to Cardi B, Megan Thee Stallion, all of these folks. I think we're in a golden era right now of young feminist voices, even young queer voices. You know, I love Young M.A. I just love, love, love Young M.A.
Like, we ain't in these streets more than sesame. Yeah. But that shit chicken, why she texting me? Why she keep calling my phone, speaking sexually?
Pop Smoke, like, all of those folks, like, together, you know, Young Thug representing, right, in these ballroom gowns. You know what I mean? Like, all of these different types of things. Hip-hop has changed. We're able to go back and rewrite it in this particular kind of a way for the new times, for the new generation. The new generation is able to do things that we never were able to do, to make critiques that we were never able to do. And I think that the sort of sense of courage and bravery and pride that BLM has encouraged in people, and this idea that it's about all the voices, as you put it, Greg, like the diversity of voices. It's not just about the people who are the sort of gatekeepers anymore. Everyone's a leader, right? It's a leaderful movement. This is what we're seeing in hip hop at this particular moment. And it's just a blessing to be able to kind of see that happening and to be able to write about it.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Jeff, of emo rap? And I'm thinking about the bravery of someone like a Tyler, the Creator, who, you know, to me, Odd Future was the snotty kid in the corner wiping his snot on the chalkboard, right? We're going to press every button we can to get a little attention. Look at me. So misogyny, homophobia, some really vile stuff in those Odd Future raps. And then the courage to come out, you know, on record.
Hey. Next line I have, I'm like, whoa, I've been kissing white boys since 2004. Hey. One me, 2 feet.
I think that's brave. I think it's inspiring. But then there's also like Drake. Poor me, mm-hmm. poor me, poor me. There ain't no kid moaning and whining about how Sally in sophomore year didn't even look at him. That's more solipsistic than a Drake, right? So what do you think about that? I mean, because that is one of the big explosions in hip-hop in the last couple of years.
You know, my own thing is I've got kids now who are just out of the pre-adulting phase into the adulting phase. We used to have these arguments about, like, Native Tongues versus Odd Future and stuff. And I remember taking my son to Rock the Bells, you know, and going to see Tyler on the second stage and being like, I don't want to do it, but if you want to go, like, let's go. And I'll sit there. And Tyler was doing his thing. And then I turned to him afterwards. I was like, finally, I get Odd Future. Mm-hmm. And he's all like, you see? Because the kids always took Tyler as somebody who was jokey. So even his, like, casual misogyny on a lot of these early records, right? Casual homophobia and that kind of stuff. Like, they took it as, like, I'm just saying this stuff because I can and I know it'll get a rise mm-hmm. out of you. And I didn't get that until I saw him in person mm-hmm. and saw the kind of kids that he was drawing and how he was interacting with them and stuff. And to think about kind of, like, that kind of way of being, thinking about Brockhampton, there's a collective of kids, right? And sexualities don't matter. Genders don't matter. Like, yeah. We're doing this thing together, right? Yeah. You know, whereas in our era, you had to be hard. It was over-masculine. It was hyper-masculine, right? It was toxically masculine in a lot of ways. That's a beautiful thing to kind of see happen. And I think, like, in some ways, in an odd way, maybe Drake actually opened the door for a lot of this to be able to happen. You know, sort of this critique that even Kanye before Drake had encompassing in his music.
I just see there's no need for Drake if you have 808s and heartbreak, but that's me. Right.
Emo rap, meaning that you have people that are able to be vulnerable and explore a softer side of themselves in a world that demands that men be men, and, you know, we have these rigid roles, especially mm-hmm. black men, right? So, you know, LL, I give him credit because he's the one that's like, I need love.
Deserve to be this way till I'm old, but the other half needs affection and joy and the warmth that is created by a girl and a boy. I need love.
Yeah.
And then we go to De La Soul, right? In some aspects of the Native Tongues, because they're wearing the daisies and they're doing that. And then we can work our way up to some of these underground artists. I'm looking at Mystic Journeyman and Living mm-hmm. Legends, right? And a lot of their early tapes where they're talking about things mm-hmm. that allow them to be like, you know, not every song is like, I'm rough and rugged. It's like, let's explore different emotions.
You never really know who's the next one to blow, whose cannon's loose, who's planning what, who's not planning, standing on shaky ground and demanding what you're not handing out. Last straw, no.
We got to put Michael Frani in there as somebody who was, you know, not only, you know, exploring those different emotions, but addressing some of those issues head on. You know, early on, he was doing songs about homophobia, you know, when he was Disposable Heroes, right?
But death is a silence in the cycle of violence. Death is a silence. It's tough to be young and unlawed, to be tougher when we pick on someone else, it might make us feel rougher.
You know, and look at hip-hop's response to the AIDS crisis. Again, a lot of that coming out as well. And then we can go and, you know, you see aspects of it with Nas, with One Mic, and people expressing grief and all that. And then by the time you get to Kanye, who's like, let me put a backpack on and be preppy. And
I'm going to tell you that I cried at my grandmother's deathbed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They outside of the emergency room. You can feel my heartbeat. Beat. If she gon' pull through, we gon' find out soon. But right now she sleep. My mama say, they say she could pass away any day. Hey chick, what these doctors know anyway? Let me see the x-rays. I ain't no expert, I'm just hurt. Cousin Kim took off.
It lays groundwork that, you know, an Odd Future can build upon. But, you know, other artists like Extension and
Juice WRLD,
others, Logic and others who are like, I'm going to talk about, you know, suicide. Yeah. I'm going to talk about, you know, all these different things. It allowed the expansion of expression, which up until recently, every other genre was allowed to go there except hip hop. And the only reason why hip hop was not allowed to go there was because the industry itself, radio and records, had a fascination and a demand on how blackness should show up. It needed to be over-sexualized as women, or it needed to be hard, and it needed to be gangster, and it needed to be all these things, except somebody who wants to come up and say, I'm not all these things. I'm vulnerable, I'm scared, I'm insecure, and, you know, and I'm also a nerd. And then people would say, well, are you really black? Yeah. Or is that street? Yeah, that is street.
Yeah.
That
you can't
is
be
black.
Skateboarding Lupe and Fiasco. White kids do that.
Yeah. All that. Lupe would be another one.
I think it was always there, though, and I just think it was underplayed. Like, you couldn't. Like, I think of the Ghetto Boys. Nobody scared people more than the Ghetto Boys in their heyday. And they have a, how do you explain my mind playing tricks on me or something like that?
Right, exactly.
You know, I mean, it's like a freaking classic song about being open and vulnerable and all those things that you're not supposed to be if you're a, you know, G-funk guy, you know? It's like,
I still don't like Drake, though. I don't like Drake.
First couple of Drake records were pretty good.
You know,
I think the first couple were good.
When Drake first came out, I didn't get it. And then Shock G from Digital Underground talked about Drake was one of the best ever to do it and broke down why. And I had to kind of relook at Drake, and I have a deeper appreciation in terms of, one, he connects to his generation. Like, if I talk to my class, you know, they'll have a bunch of different opinions, but Drake is that guy. Drake is like their Rakim, you know, and I know somebody who likes Rakim would be like, how dare you say, but he's that.
Probably Rakim too,
But Rakim was that transformative figure that, you know, that you look back and you go, that's him. KRS and Rakim are those pillars. Whether you like it or not, Drake is a main pillar for the millennium. And for a group of people that are now up, he's that, like, there's Drake, and then I like everybody else. The way Pac was and Biggie were for people coming out of the 90s. So you may not like him. You know, you may not get him. But Drake, as a DJ, as somebody who DJs all the time, you know, at parties, let me do a party and not play Drake, even for older crowd now.
Well, we could talk for hours with Davey D and Jeff Chang. But this is what we got, guys. And we just want to say congratulations. Can't Stop, Won't Stop in this new young adult edition, updated for the times. A stone cold classic in the annals of pop music literature.
Thank you, Jim. Hey, we want to tell people that there's an audiobook as well that Dave and I voiced.
Cool.
If you listen closely, you'll get to hear Dave doing So Makossa. it's a classic moment in audiobook history. We hope that we get a Grammy for it.
Well, congratulations on the book, and thanks for being on Sound Opinions.
Thank you so much for having us. It's been wonderful.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
What do you think about Drake? Bad left turn in the history of hip-hop or the future of the music? Leave us a voice message on our website or start a conversation in our Facebook group.
But when they love me,
that was a bit of a remix version of the song Cloud Nine by Beach Bunny, featuring Tegan and Sarah. The original song is off the band's 2020 album, Honeymoon, which was one of my favorite albums of last year. Beach Bunny is a Chicago band formed in 2015 by lead singer Lily Trefilio that's becoming known nationally after Cloud Nine started blowing up on the internet. That led Lily to make that collaborative remix of the song with Tegan and Sarah, using new pronouns throughout the track to include her LGBTQ plus fans.
Our producer Alex Claiborne caught up with Lily of Beach Bunny a few months ago to talk about the song that got her hooked on Sonics during quarantine and inspired her to make music in a different way.
Hi, I'm Lily Trefilio. I'm from the band Beach Bunny, and one song in particular that's really impacted me and how I write and produce is Kill vs. Maine by Grimes. I first discovered this song back in April of 2020, so still pretty recently. But genuinely, I've listened to it every day since. And it's one of those songs that makes me want to both punch my fist through a wall, but also makes me want to just lock myself in a bedroom and make beats all day. I really like how high energy it is, and I like that there are so many factors that went into it that maybe you can't hear at first listen, but the more times you listen, you notice the little nuances and subtleties. For instance, there's this like crowd roaring sound that's really tucked into the background that makes it almost sound like it's at a live show being performed, even though it was all artificial. Drums are really cool, and the bass is also super punk, which I love punk music. So I kind of like that the lyrics of the song, you also don't really understand at first listen. You have to listen a bunch of times to kind of understand the words, because they're really distorted and kind of bizarre. That song has had like a really big impact on my own creativity. I feel like every time I listen to it, I just get so inspired. I think someone I knew maybe recommended the song, and I heard it once and was like, whoa, I need to go through her entire discography now. I think the song has had a few effects. In terms of Beach Bunny, the last single we just put out, Good Girls Don't Get Used, I think was pretty heavily influenced by that song, just in terms of having like a really chunky bass line and keeping the energy really aggressive the whole time. That song and just Grimes in general kind of influenced me to start a side project and learn how to produce more and not just be I guess a musician and a lyricist, but also a producer.
Thanks a lot to Lily Trefilio of Beach Bunny for talking to Alex Claiborne about the song that got her started making music. Tickets are on sale, Greg, to the band's fall tour. Tickets! Tours!
Wow.
Oh my goodness. And they just appeared on Jimmy Fallon's show. Greg, what do we have on the show next week?
Next week, Jim, we are going to talk with Nancy Wilson about her first studio solo album and all things heart.
Cool beans. For more sound opinions, listen to our podcast wherever you find such things. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this program belong solely to Sound Opinions and not necessarily to Columbia College Chicago or our sponsors.
And speaking of sponsors, every week our show reaches hundreds of thousands of curious listeners from around the globe via podcast and on 150 public radio stations nationwide. If you'd like to learn more on how your business or organization can also reach this engaged and educated audience, you can email sponsor at soundopinions.org. That's sponsor at soundopinions.org.
Thanks, as always, to our Patreon supporters. Sound Opinions is produced by Andrew Gill, Alex Claiborne, and our intern, Sol Delgadillo.